Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. And today, we are going to be talking about one of my personal favorite pieces of American, North American, I should be specific, but North American folklore and mythology. We're going to be talking about the legendary and terrifying Wendigo. Now, the Wendigo, for starters, is a creature that goes by a number of names. It's been called the Windigo, the Windago, the Witico, the Weetigo, the Witticow, the Wendigo. But most commonly, it's referred to as the Wendigo. It's made popular appearances in several TV shows, one of which probably you might know better than others. Supernatural was one in which the Wendigo appeared prominently in. I believe it had a couple episodes in there. But the Wendigo is a creature that is said to haunt the northern forests of the Atlantic coast and Great Lakes region of both the United States and Canada. Now, the legend itself has actually been around for quite a long time, and it's even contributed to the medical field with a medical diagnosis that's actually named after the Wendigo legend. It's a medical term that is referred to as Wendigo psychosis, which is described by psychiatrists as a culture-bound syndrome with symptoms such as intense cravings for human flesh and a fear of becoming a cannibal. So this is a very influential story, to say the very least. So without further ado, let's get right into the story itself. It's been the subject of movies, television shows, comic books. So let's get right into it. The Wendigo, again, comes out of the Algonquin people's folklore. It's a cannibal monster, and sometimes also referred to as a cannibalistic spirit, that possesses some characteristics of a human and also of a spirit. It's said to be something that can possess a human being and make them become monsters. Historically, it's been associated with cannibalism, murder, insatiable greed, and the cultural taboos that exist against those behaviors. Now, I think many of us are familiar with some of the stories associated with the Wendigo. If you're not, then I have a real treat for you, because I'm gonna give you guys a little bit of one of the particular myths associated with the Wendigo that's been recited for quite a long time. And it's an adaptation of the original Algonquin myth of the Wendigo. It talks of a storm that lasts so long that a lost family believed that it would never end. Father family was a brave warrior and ventured outside. He knew that if he didn't find food soon, his family would starve. Now, keeping his knife and spear close, he ventured out amongst the most frequently used game trails, watching intently for some sign in the newly fallen snow of animal footprints or movement of any kind. The forest he was in was deep and oddly silent. Every creature of sense lay deep within its burrow and slept. Still, the warrior hunted, knowing how desperate his family had become. As he moved through the eerie stillness, broken only by the soft caress of the wind, he heard a strange hissing noise, and it came from everywhere and nowhere at once. At no time could he locate the sound source. The warrior stopped, and that was when he saw the blood-soaked footprints appearing on the path in front of him. He began to grip his knife tightly, knowing that somewhere watching him was a dreaded Wendigo. He had learned about the Wendigo at his father's knee. It was a large creature, as tall as a tree, with a lipless mouth and jagged teeth. Its breath was a strange hiss, its footprints full of blood, and it any man, woman, or child who would venture into its territory. And those were the lucky ones, because sometimes the Wendigo chose to possess a person instead, and then the luckless individual would become a Wendigo himself, hunting down those that he had once loved and feasting upon their flesh and soul. The warrior knew he would have only one chance to prevail over the Wendigo. After that, he would be killed, or worse still, become the next possessed with the Wendigo spirit. Now, slowly, our hero backs away from the bloody footprints, listening to the hissing sound. Was it stronger in one direction or in another? As he grips his spear in one hand and his knife in the other, he stumbles, and the snowbank to his left erupts as a creature as tall as a tree leaps out at him. Creature so that his clothing rolling into the snow so that his clothing was covered, and he became hard to see in the gray twilight of the approaching storm. The Wendigo whirled its massive frame, and the warrior threw his spear, striking the creature's chest, but unfortunately for the hero, the Wendigo shook it off as if it were a toy. The warrior crouched behind a small tree as the creature searched the torn up snow for a trace of him. Perhaps one more chance. But the Wendigo loomed over his hiding place, its sharp eyes seeing the outline of him against the tree. It bent down, long arms reaching. The warrior, in pain, leapt forward as if to embrace the creature and to thrust his knife into its fathomless eye. The Wendigo would howl in pain as the blade of the knife sliced into its brain cavity and tried to pull him off, but the warrior clung to the creature desperately, stabbing it repeatedly in the eyes and head. The Wendigo collapsed from the struggle, bleeding profusely and almost crushing the warrior beneath him. But the warrior manages to pull himself loose, stare at the creature, which now blended in with the white surroundings so well that he would not have seen it save for the blood pouring from its eyes and ears. Then the outline of the creature would grow misty and vanish, leaving only a pool of blood to indicate where it had fallen. Now the warrior himself, shaken by his efforts and weakened by the lack of food, knew that the storm would break soon and he would die if he did not seek shelter. At the edge of the wood, he found himself face to face with a small red fox. It was a fat old creature, its muzzle lined with gray, and the creature stood still as if it had been brought to him as a reward for killing the Wendigo. With a prayer of thanksgiving, the warrior would kill the fox and take it home to his starving family. The meat lasted for many days until the final storm had blown itself out and the warrior could safely hunt once more. Now, this is one of the original myths from the Algonquins, and it tells the story of a hunter lost in the snow who finds himself face to face with this dreaded creature. Now, I mentioned early on in the show that the Wendigo is seen as the embodiment of greed and hunger. The Wendigo itself is a creature that we can refer to most, you know, much in the same way that we refer to vampires as a social control. Its story is meant to be a warning to those who would not fit within society, who would not go with the, who try to go against the grain, right? People that don't want to be moral and ethical, this is what could happen to you. Now, the Wendigo and creatures like it exist in myths, again, all along the Atlantic coast and the Great Lakes region, but they're also found in the legends of several of the neighbors of the Algonquins, the Iroquois among them, and they even have stories of a similar creature, some refer to as Stonecoat Bear, which bears striking similarities to the Wendigo. Now, the Wendigo's name, roughly translated, basically means the spirit that devours mankind. Now, another translation was said to have been made by a German explorer around 1860, and it equates the word with cannibal. Wendigo are said to have an insatiable hunger for human flesh, and no matter how much flesh they eat, they will always be hungry. The hunger is reflected in their appearance. Now, according to some stories, despite their, you know, rather physiques, the Wendigo are described by some as being giants, measuring at about 14 feet in height. While there are slight variations as to the physical description of the creature, amongst the different Algonquin peoples, it's generally agreed that the Wendigo have glowing eyes, long yellow fangs, and long tongues. Now, most Wendigo are said to have sallow and yellowish skin, though others say that they are matted with hair or have decaying skin. Now, legends say that the Wendigo were once human beings. And according to the most popular versions of the story, a Wendigo was formed whenever a human being resorted to cannibalism, even if it were done in an effort to survive. And when a person consumes the flesh of another human being, he or she is believed to be overcome by evil spirits and transformed into a Wendigo. Now, in another version of the story, the Wendigo is said to have been a warrior who made a deal with evil spirits. And in order to save his tribe, he sacrificed his soul. Now, and was transformed into a Wendigo. Now, when peace ensued, there was no need for such a fearsome creature, and the warrior was banished from his tribe and forced to live as an outcast. As a consequence, some people believe that the human person continues to reside, that this person continues to reside and prey on human beings, and has for some time. It's believed, some, according to this story, it's the same, the Wendigo has been the same the whole time. Now, some people believe that a person continues to reside within the Wendigo, where specifically where its heart should be. The person is frozen, and the only way to kill a Wendigo is to kill the human within it as well. Now, there are a few legends that state that the frozen person is successfully rescued from inside the creature, and in most cases, but in most cases, death is the only way to free a person from the spirit of the Wendigo. The Wendigo were believed to roam around the forest where the Algonquians lived, and appeared over the years are rumored to have been eaten by these creatures. Many Wendigo sightings have been reported over time, not only by Native Americans, but also by white settlers. Between the late 1800s and the 1920s, a Wendigo is said to have appeared near a town called Rousseau in northern Minnesota, and it's been claimed that each time a sighting of this creature was made, an unexpected death followed. The sightings, however, eventually stopped and things went back to normal amongst the Cree people. There is a traditional dance called the Witotanasimuin, or the Wendigo-like dance. Now, during this dance, the fearsome Wendigo is portrayed satirically by the dancers. Now, in addition to satirizing the Wendigo, some Native Americans even became Wendigo hunters. Now, at the beginning of the 20th century, one man by the name of Jack Fiddler was tried for the murder of a Cree woman, and whilst he pled guilty to the crime, he defended himself by saying that the woman was on the verge of transforming into a Wendigo, as she was being possessed by the evil spirit. Therefore, she had to be killed before she murdered other members of the tribe. In addition to this woman, Fiddler claimed to have slain at least 13 other Wendigo during his lifetime. The Wendigo itself, however, has been discussed by many as most, for the most part, being the embodiment of all that people fear as far as the societal taboos of the Algonquin people. So you don't, when you live in a society that is largely agrarian and relies on small groups of people to go out and sort of hunt down meat for subsistence, one thing you can't have in a tribal setting is somebody who's greedy, somebody who doesn't want to contribute and will just eat up all the resources. So when you live in a society dependent on everybody, you know, doing their fair share of work and everybody realizing that, okay, you can't just eat all the food, all the resources. In many settings, people that were considered to be gluttonous were often told that if you continue on the path that you're on, this insatiable greed, where you have to fill your stomach all the time, you could become a Wendigo. So this is a key example of why you would want to sort of have a story like this. This is a great social control, because what you don't want to do is become a creature that preys on your fellow man. You don't want to become this spirit of hunger that can never be satisfied. Now, the Wendigo curse, being cursed to be, and becoming a Wendigo, is considered by the Algonquin-speaking peoples, most notably the Ojibwe and the Saulteaux, the Cree, the Naskapi, and the Innu people, to be one of the worst things that could ever happen to you. It's a fate worse than death, because what happens is you become a malevolent and cannibalistic being who must subsist on not only those that you know and care about, but also you're going to be feeding on the rest of the members of your tribe, and you're going to be more than just a pest. You're going to be a menace to those around you. You are going to be something that they fear. And as a consequence, you're going to be something that has to be dealt with, something that has to be killed. So it's no surprise we see individuals claiming, most likely that the individual, Mr. Fiddler, actually killed this person just because he wanted to. But that being said, people would have taken this quite seriously, because what you don't want to happen to you is you don't want to be a curse on your tribe. When you die, you want to be able to rest. You want to go where your ancestors are. You want to go where your loved ones are. And if you become a Wendigo, that can't happen, because when you pass on, you come back as this malevolent spirit. Now you're hungry, and the only way you can sustain yourself is by eating other people and devouring all the resources. The Wendigo don't simply just target human beings. In some cases, the Wendigo target resources. They destroy crops. They destroy everything. They upset the balance of day-to-day life. And as a consequence, they serve as an example of what not to do, as an example of what not to be. So again, we look at this story that we've got. We have one individual, Basil Johnson, who's an Ojibwe teacher and a scholar from Ontario, who gives us the description of a Wendigo. Basil describes the Wendigo as being gaunt to the point of emaciation. Its desiccated skin is pulled tightly over its bones, with its bones pushing out against its skin. Its complexion, the ash gray of death, and its eyes pushed deep back into their sockets. The Wendigo looked like a gaunt skeleton recently disinterred from the grave. What lips it had were tattered and bloody, unclean and suffering from separations of the flesh. The Wendigo gave off a strange and eerie odor of decay and decomposition, of death and corruption. So when we see this creature, this is not a creature that is, pretty to look at. This is terrifying. This is the stuff of nightmares. What we have is a creature that skin is falling off. The bones are poking through the skin because of how emaciated it is. And its lips are curled back. Its jagged teeth are sticking out. Mouth. It's got, hot, nasty drools leaking around its fangs. And the only thing that it cares about is eating. And eating everything, destroying everything. So we have this spirit that is also a living, that is also at the same time almost a living thing. In the descriptions of the Wendigo, we have a spirit that is both spirit and man or animal in some cases, but it's both at the same time. So it's both alive and not alive. So it's undead, but it has these It has sentience. It's not like our zombie, in popular culture. We talked about zombies recently, and this story is not like zombies. We think undead, we think zombie, right? Or, you know, maybe vampire. But for the most part, we think zombies. Zombies are, you know, for the most part considered in many respects to be, you know, rather mindless, depending on who's tackling it. But in much of our popular culture, zombies are rather mindless. All they do is, you know, go after you in a horde and they try to eat you. The Wendigo is intelligent. This is what makes one of the things that makes the Wendigo so terrifying is that it is a hungry manifestation of hunger and greed, and it knows what it needs and it knows how to get what it needs. In the original story that I just read to you guys, you can see that this creature knows how to use its surroundings to hide. It knows how to get what it wants. Now, of course, in the original story, the man survives. Otherwise, you know, who tells the story, right? I mean, somebody's got to tell the story. So there has to be a survivor. With that being said, you look at this story and you think, yeah, forget that. Anybody within their right mind is going to say, yeah, you don't want that. Now, descriptions of the Wendigo, it's important to note, do vary somewhat across the board. You know, there's not really a consistent pin down, this is what it looks like and this is what it does. One of the only things that is particularly, unifying across the board as far as a common theme is that the reason that there are Wendigo is that there are greedy people. And these greedy people will destroy everything around them. Greed is one thing you can't afford to have in a society that is both tight-knit and reliant on one another to be, you know, willing to share their resources. You live in a very, culturally tight-knit society, a largely oral tradition where everybody knows each other. Everybody relies on each other to survive. You're living off the land to a degree. Maybe you have some agrarian skills to where you can grow your own crops, maybe just enough to subsist upon. But again, this is one of those situations where you have a social control, and this social control is, well, you don't want greedy people around you. Greedy people can cause other people to die, right? When resources are scarce, if somebody's being greedy with scant resources, people will suffer as a consequence of that, right? We start running out of food, we start running out of water. If there's only one person drinking all the water and eating all the food, there's going to be some hungry people. There's going to be some thirsty people. And this is one of the major concerns that people in these tribes have, is that you're not going to be, willing to share your resources. And again, we move to the next, sort of concern, and that's cannibalism. When resources are scarce, how do I know that I can trust you? If you're a cannibal and resources are scarce, I'm going to be looking over my shoulder wondering, am I going to have to worry about you sneaking up on me in the middle of the night, bashing my head in with a rock and picking my brains out and eating them? This is something you don't want to have to worry about when, times are tough. You don't want to have to worry that your neighbor is going to crack your skull open with a rock and eat your brains. You want to know that, all right, Bob, things are tough, but Bob's a nice guy. He's going to help me out, and I'll help him out. We'll get through this together. What you don't want is to get up and say, oh, Bob, next door, yeah, times are tough. We didn't get a good harvest this year. Hunting's been really, game's been slim this year. We're trying to make it through the cold winter. Oh, but Bob, he's made it through the cold winter before. Oh, yeah? How did you do that? He ate his whole family. So you don't want that to be your neighbor during the winter time, right? You don't want the winter to come and your neighbor has eaten everybody around you and you're that last neighbor, hanging around. Great. Now, granted, this is rather exaggerated, of course. I'm being a little bit, humorous and facetious about it. But you don't want that to happen. You want to prevent people from resorting to such an extreme because, again, you want to be able to trust and rely in. You want to be able to trust people and rely on them in this setting to be good, to show decency. Now, there are some other associations that are made with the Wendigo that are important to mention. The Wendigo are said to ride the wind. They are said to bring with them cold winds. The appearance of Wendigo can signify the coming of a long winter. It's said that when there is a Wendigo nearby, the air becomes cold. The winds pick up. They're also associated with famine and starvation. And, of course, they would be, as Wendigo are these beings that consume everything, right? They will consume all your crops. They will consume all your food stores and eventually, you know, lead to your starvation. You become prey to the Wendigo when you're weak and you've got no food and you've got no water. You run out of resources because the Wendigo's the spirit of the Wendigo's taken all your resources, leaving you vulnerable. And then the only thing left for the Wendigo to take from you, of course, is your life, which the Wendigo, of course, will also take. Now, the important to note also that there are some other things associated with the Wendigo. The Wendigo is associated as well with the concept of ecological destruction, because at least now in the more modern context, that's what the Wendigo has come to sort of symbolize, the overarching theme of greed that exists within humans, the idea that people are insatiable, they are greedy. Now, in addition to denoting a cannibalistic monster, Native Americans also understand the Wendigo in a manner of that is quite different. They can conceptualize the Wendigo a little bit better than people might give them credit for. Now, as a concept, the Wendigo can apply to any person, idea, or movement infected by a corrosive drive, self-aggrandizing greed, and excessive consumption, traits that sow disharmony and destruction within society if left unchecked. Something I've already said, tried to drive home. I can't drive it home hard enough. It's very important. One scholar, an Ojibwe scholar named Brady DeSante, asserts that the Wendigo can be understood as a marker indicating a person imbalanced both internally and toward the larger community of human and spiritual beings around them, out of equilibrium and estranged by their communities, individuals afflicted by the Wendigo spirit unravel, and they destroy the environmental balance around them. In one novel, The Roundhouse, written by a Chippewa author named Luis Art Erdert, it's the winner of a National Book Award. It depicts a situation where an individual person becomes a Wendigo, and the novel describes in detail its primary antagonist, who is a rapist whose violent crimes desecrate a sacred site, and as a Wendigo who must be killed because he threatens the reservation's safety. Now, in addition to characterizing individual people who exhibit destructive tendencies, the Wendigo has also been used to describe movements and events with similarly negative effects. According to one professor, Dr. Chris Shedler, the figure of the Wendigo represents consuming forms of exclusion and assimilation through which groups dominate other groups. This application allows Native Americans to describe colonialism and its agents as cultural Wendigos, something worth investigating there for those of you interested in that aspect of it. Now, since the process of colonialism pushed the natives from their land and through the natural world, pushed these people from their land and through the natural world out of balance, this is one reason why they are able to, they've been sort of able to conceptualize colonialism and the people who are agents of colonialism, you know, white settlers or the Spanish or the French or the English, whoever it happened to be, as Wendigos. Now, Brady DeSante points to the 1999 horror film Ravenous, a very popular horror film for its time, as an illustration of this argument, equating the cannibal monster to American colonialism and Manifest Destiny. By the way, the film Ravenous is also available, I believe, on Netflix. It's actually worth investigating. It does deal with cannibalism and this concept and some of these other concepts they're talking about where, you know, the deals with the cannibal monster and cannibalism. It also deals with American colonialism, Manifest Destiny, and features a character who articulates that expansion brings displacement and destruction as side effects, explaining that Manifest Destiny and Western expansion will bring thousands of gold-hungry Americans over the mountains in search of new lives, suggesting this country is seeking to be whole, stretching out its arms, and consuming all that it can. And we merely follow. So, and these are sort of paraphrase quotes from the film itself. If you want more information, more examples of how the Wendigo legend has been sort of lent to critiques of colonialism, you can look at a book written by Jackie Forbes in 1978, Columbus and Other Cannibals, which is an influential text within the American Indian movement. Now, as a concept, the Wendigo can apply to many other situations other than just Native American-European relations or dealing with greed in terms of resources. It can serve as a metaphor explaining any pattern of domination by which groups subjugate and dominate or violently destroy and displace others. So a professor at Arizona State University, Joe Lockhart, argues that Wendigos are agents of social cannibalism who know no provincial or national borders. All human cultures have been visited by shape-shifting Wendigos. Their visitations speak to the inseparability of the human experience. And national identity is irrelevant to this borderless horror. Now, if you're interested in where this comes from Facing the Wendigo, Gerald Weisenor and Primo Levi. It's from the University of Nebraska Press. That's the title of the book, Facing the Wendigo. And in this, Lockhart argues that Wendigos are an expression of a dark aspect of human nature, the drive toward greed, consumption, and disregard for other life in the pursuit of self-aggrandization. Now, most people that are familiar with the Wendigo are familiar with the Wendigo because of one reason and one reason only. There is a writer by the name of Algernon Blackwood who wrote a short story in 1910 called The Wendigo. And his book, his short story has been very influential. It's influenced many subsequent portrayals in mainstream horror fiction, such as August Derleth's The Thing That Walked in the Wind, Ithaca in 1933 and 1941, respectively. It also inspired the character in Stephen King's novel Pet Sematary, where it is a personification of evil, an ugly grinning creature with yellow gray eyes. It's referring specifically to the person raised from the dead. The Wendigo appears in American comic books published by Marvel Comics, written by Steve Englehart and illustrated by Herb Tremp. The monster is the result of a curse that afflicts those who commit acts of cannibalism in parts of Canada. And it first appears, actually, in The Incredible Hulk number 162 in the April 1973 edition, fighting the Incredible Hulk as well as the Wolverine in his first comic book appearance. So interestingly enough, the Wendigo is actually a comic book villain as well. Wasn't enough for it to be a terrifying villain within Native American folklore. It had to jump over that and become and surpass even that. It truly is a creature that's larger than life. Creatures based upon Wendigos appear in a number of films, including Ravenous, the film The Descent, in which we see creatures that have striking similarities and abilities to the Wendigo. Of course, I mentioned Supernatural. It's also appeared in the television series Charmed, Grimm, and also even more notably in the series Hannibal, in which a creature vastly matching the Wendigo in appearance and symbolism appears in several episodes. It appears in several role-playing games such as Until Dawn, The Legend of the Secret World, Warcraft universes, as well as role-playing games such as Dungeons & Dragons. So it's a creature that's been pretty popularized in terms of popular culture, but it's important to note that this is not where the Wendigo story ends. Now, among the Assiniboine and the Cree, and the Cree and the Ojibwe, I mentioned the satirical dance, the Wendigo dance, that is sometimes performed during times of famine to reinforce the importance of, you know, being generous and being, you know, together, showing a good spirit of community. This dance is still performed today, I believe it's been performed up until it was performed up until the 90s. I'm not entirely sure if it's still performed today. That's something I'd have to specifically look into. But it was performed up until about 1990 at Lake Wendigo of Star Island at Cass Lake, located within the Leech Lake Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota. So this is one of the last known Wendigo ceremonies conducted in the U.S. But it's still something worth investigating. I mentioned earlier the Wendigo psychosis. The medical diagnosis that's actually been gets its name from the Wendigo as well. In the historical accounts of Wendigo psychosis, it's been reported that humans become possessed by the Wendigo spirit after being in a situation of needing food and having no other choice besides cannibalism. Now, one of the more famous cases of the Wendigo psychosis that's been reported involves a Plains Cree trapper from Alberta named Swift Runner. During the winter of 1878, Swift Runner and his family are starving, and his eldest son died. They're 25 miles away from emergency food supplies at the Hudson's Bay Company post. Swift Runner then butchered and ate his wife and five remaining children to survive. You would think eating his dead son and wife would have been enough, but apparently he ate his wife and his five remaining children. And this is an account according to Robert A. Brightman, The Wendigo in the Material World, which is an ethnohistory he did. It's published in 1988. And now according to Brightman's account of this, given that he resorted to cannibalism so near to food supplies and that he killed and consumed the remains of all those present, it was revealed that Swift Runner's was not a case of pure cannibalism as a last resort towards starvation, but rather of a man with Wendigo psychosis. He eventually confesses to his crime and is executed at Fort Saskatchewan. There's been a couple of other well-known cases. One such case involving the Wendigo psychosis was that of Jack Fiddler, who I mentioned before. He was an OG Cree chief and medicine man known for his powers at defeating Wendigos. In some cases, it entailed killing people with Wendigo psychosis. People that were suffering from basically the same thing he was. As a result, in 1907, Fiddler and his brother Joseph were arrested by the Canadian authorities for homicide. Jack himself committed suicide, but Joseph was tried and sentenced to life in prison. Ultimately, he was granted a pardon, but he died 3 days later in jail before receiving news of his pardon. Now, when I say that they and their victims suffered from Wendigo psychosis, let's take a look at what the Wendigo psychosis is, because this is very important that we explain the reason why, how they could possibly suffer from the same thing that the victims suffered from. So The Wendigo psychosis specifically is the fear of becoming a Wendigo or the fear of resorting to cannibalism. It's prominently defined as an intense craving for human flesh, and also the fear that you will give in to this craving. So essentially, what we have is the fear that you'll become a Wendigo, or the fear that you could succumb to this desire to eat another person, matched with the fear that somebody else is going to suffer from this. So before they do, you just kill them. So that is why we can say that both the victim and the perpetrator of the crime suffered from the same disorder, because it's a disorder that afflicts a person with a phobia that somebody around them could succumb to being a Wendigo, or that they themselves would become the victim of a Wendigo. And it's also this intense craving for human flesh that goes along with it, that's also been associated with Wendigo psychosis. So, somebody might have made an offhand remark. They were so hungry. So in other words, don't say you were so hungry you could eat your brother. Just stick with the "I'm so hungry I could eat a horse" thing, and maybe your neighbors won't murder you, at least in this context. Now, there was a fascination, really, with the Wendigo psychosis amongst ethnographers, psychologists, and anthropologists, which led to hotly debated controversy in the 80s over the historiosity of this phenomenon. There are many researchers that argued that essentially the Wendigo psychosis is a fabrication, was a fabrication and the result of naive stories related to them at face value without observation. Now, others have pointed to a number of credible eyewitness accounts, both by Algonquins and others, as evidence that the Wendigo psychosis was a factual historical phenomenon. Now, the frequency of Wendigo psychosis cases decreased sharply in the 20th century as Boreal Algonquin people came into greater and greater contact with Western ideologies and more sedentary, less rural lifestyles. So we haven't really seen people claiming that they're suffering from the Wendigo psychosis. You know, there's not a lot of people out there saying, "I would totally eat my neighbor if I could." I know it's sad, but you know, eventually you just got to move on. You got to give up on eating your neighbors sometime. It's got to happen sometime. So in this case, this is a story that's, you know, been around for quite a while, and it evolved a great deal. It's had profound impacts on popular culture, so much so that it's even influenced the medical field. They even had to come up with an entire mental disorder to associate with people that were, you know, believed to be afflicted by this disorder. So I want to return the Wendigo. We've talked about, you know, more or less the more factual side of things, looked at some of the sources, you know, of where the Wendigo comes from. But now I want to look more at the story itself. We talked a little bit about, you know, what the Wendigo could be, look like, you know, what's it do. But let's take a look more at the, you know, things associated with the Wendigo. Let's take a look more at the legend itself. So the Wendigo, if we look at it, if we go into the mythos, take away the factual side for a moment, we still get a very interesting story, right? Yes, it's important that we've looked at the reason for the story being told. But now I want to take a step out of that for a moment and move towards why this story is as entertaining as it is. Because this story is terrifying, for sure. It's definitely scary to think that a person would, you know, be able to consume, you know, their relatives. I mean, this individual who's, you know, 25 miles from the nearest, you know, safe haven where food and shelter can be found and just says, I'll eat my family. That'll do, you know. That's pretty horrifying to think about. But we gotta look at the rest of this story. The myth itself is still incredibly fascinating. So let's take a look specifically at some of the things associated with the Wendigo. So I mentioned that a person who consumed another person could become a Wendigo, but that's not the only way that a person can become a Wendigo. You see, much like Wendigo can turn other people into Wendigo, but the method in which they do it is a little bit different. Now, the story varies depending on who you talk to, or depending on which version of the story you're looking at. But in many, many cases, the Wendigo can simply take over an individual's body. They simply jump inside of you, take over your body, and you become the manifestation of the Wendigo itself, which I think is particularly terrifying in and of itself, not just the fact that you're going to be possessed by this unquenchable, unslackable hunger in which you have now got to eat all the time, but it's not just this need to feed, the desire to eat everything and anything that you can. Terrible transformation that you undergo where your bones start to crack through your skin, you start to rot, you get... You know, your eyes change, they become glowing and yellow, your teeth, your jaw shifts, you become misshapen, your teeth elongate, you grow claws, your hair gets all disheveled, parts of your skin simply fall off and reveal your innards. In some cases, what's even more terrifying is that the Wendigo itself in some stories takes on some of the characteristics of the creatures that it not only possesses, but also the creatures that it eats. So you have all these different portrayals of the Wendigo, some of which with antlers, with bear faces, all sorts of things. Imagine a spirit or creature that when it eats something, it takes some of the most dangerous things from that creature. So picture a creature that's got the claws of a bear, that's large like a bear, got the speed of a wolf, got sharp antlers or tusks of a boar, antlers of a deer. Now picture that this thing is walking on 2 feet like a human and can not only run faster than you, could potentially be bigger than, you know, not only could it potentially be, you know, 14 feet tall, depending on the story that you're listening to, not only can it outrun you, within some tales about the Wendigo can fly. So it's almost like they came up with this creature, and it just gets worse and worse, depending on the story you listen to. It just gets so much worse. You know, here's a creature that it's bad enough that you basically it can take over your body and turn you into this agent of hunger in which you just go around and eat anybody and anything. You don't care if they're related to you or not. You'll eat your whole family. You'll go stark raving mad and kill everybody that you know. That's terrifying, okay? But going stark raving mad, killing everybody you know, that's really horrifying. Being able to do that, you know, doing that and then being able to fly, then being able to take on the characteristics of those that you devour. And when I say characteristics, I don't just mean the external characteristics. In some stories, the Wendigo can fool people by stealing the voices of its victims. We have stories of people who find themselves being hunted by a Wendigo, and they're fooled by the Wendigo because the Wendigo ate their friend, ate their relative, and stole their voice. That is horrifying. So you have an individual. So not only now can you not trust what you, you know, not only can you not trust those around you in this scenario, but now you have a creature that can devour other people that you know and then say, hey, you know, how's it going, man? How you doing? Come on over. And, you know, it's dark outside. You can't see him. He calls, you know, it's your buddy. He calls you over, and then it's a freaking Wendigo. It jumps out and kills you. That's some straight-up bullcrap right there. You know, that is not cool that this thing can do the things that it can do. I mean, I'm having a little bit too much fun talking about this, but in reality, when you think about it, this is a terrifying creature to behold. The Wendigo is said to have a number of skills and powers, including stealth. It's a near-perfect hunter. It knows and uses every inch of the terrain and territory that it's in. It can blend in with its territory. It can blend in with its surroundings, almost like an active camouflage. It sees you before you see it in almost every scenario. So that's pretty terrifying. This thing is like a spirit predator. That is freaking terrifying. To top it off, and guys, there's no telltale shimmer. There's no telltale shimmer for this guy. So don't think that, you know, it's going to be like Archer and Predator. You can't see his, you know, cloaking device giving off his movement. According to the stories, there is no cloaking device. He just shows up, and this guy just shows up and eats you, which is kind of messed up. In addition to that, as if that wasn't bad enough, that this thing can steal voices, that it can fly in some scenarios, that it can take on characteristics of animals and people that it eats, that it can steal people's voices, it also has access to magic, and a very specific kind of magic. The Wendigo itself is said to be able to call down storms. It's said to be able to call down entire blizzards to trap people. Imagine everything is fine, the weather is calm, and then you get hit with a blizzard out of nowhere. Now, this has happened many times throughout history. We here have seen it happen. Depending on where you live in the United States, personally spent a great deal of time in the northern United States, specifically Ohio, Indiana, in that part of the world, in that part of the country. We are no strangers to snowstorms. But what an apt way of blaming a snowstorm on a Wendigo. So you have this creature that can basically show up, be all as terrifying as it possibly could be. You think it can not get any worse. Now it can use magic to hit you with a blizzard out of nowhere. This thing is like a Pokemon from hell. That is terrifying. This thing is a shape-shifting ass-kicker that just does whatever it wants. Conceivably does whatever it wants, takes over whoever it wants. This is one twisted demon. Some legends describe it as being a giant with an icy heart, sometimes thought to be entirely made of ice. Now, depending on the story you get, you're going to get a lot of different. We're going into the variations of the story because I want to give you guys a picture of how terrifying this creature can really be. So in some tales, some variations of the story, we have a giant, an ice giant, essentially, with a heart of ice, sometimes thought to be entirely composed of ice. Its body is skeletal, deformed with missing lips and toes. The Ojibwa describe it as a large creature as tall as a tree, with a lipless mouth and jagged teeth, its breath releasing a strange hiss. Its footprints always full of blood because it's always feeding. It's always covered in blood, and it ate any man, woman, or child who ventured into its territory. Sometimes it possessed the person instead, and then the luckless individual becomes a Wendigo, hunting down those who it once loved the most, feeding upon their flesh. Other versions of the creature spoke of as a gigantic spirit over 15 feet tall that had once been human but had been transformed into a creature possessed by an insatiable hunger by the use of magic. Now, despite the fact that all descriptions of the creature vary slightly, The Wendigo is generally said to have glowing eyes, long yellowed fangs, terribly long, sharp, jagged claws, and an overly long tongue with which it uses to lap up the blood of its victims, probably steal your frickin' soul. So this thing shows absolutely no mercy. There's no reasoning with it. Sometimes they're described as having sallow, yellowish skin. Other times they're depicted to be covered with matted hair, or simply to be skeletal creatures. They are said to have a number of other skills as well, ranging from superhuman agility and almost complete invulnerability to natural mortal weapons. So basically, whenever we were kids, we all wanted to be superheroes. The people that came up with this story were the kid you played with that was just like, I get all the powers. And you just, I'm going to take all powers for 1,000, please. So this thing basically has unlimited amounts of power, and it's virtually unkillable. With the exception of the guy that stabs one in the heart and cuts its heart out. How many people are going to be able to cut out this thing's heart? Be real. Something that can jump down out of nowhere, kill you without a moment, without any kind of hesitation, without your ability to really do anything about it because of its heightened reflexes. We're not going to talk about how awesome the guy in the story is that actually killed, in the original myth, that actually killed the Wendigo is. If it's got all these powers and this guy killed it, this guy's a god. All right? He's a beast. I'm going to tell you right now, if I killed something like this, I'd cut its head off, I'd mount it on my wall, I'd be telling everybody. I guess that's why why we get this legend, because this guy, the guy in our story that survived this thing, he should have been gifted with more than a fox, people. All right, the story has him being gifted with a fox for ridding the world of an evil spirit, the Wendigo. That is total bullcrap. That is not enough. When we look at this thing's laundry list of abilities, look at its laundry list of just terrifying things that it can do, that it's capable of, that is ridiculous. I'm not as familiar with the Ojibwa or Algonquin's, pantheon, as far as the gods that they believed in. This is about as close as I can get into their belief system, about as much as I know about it. But that guy got totally robbed. I mean, I don't know what the significance of a fox is, but I'd be asking for a whole damn deer or something. Give me a wildebeest. Give me something. I just killed a Wendigo. Come on. This guy got totally robbed in this story. And, people are going to say, well, that's just silly. It's just a legend. Yeah, but, come on. you hear a legend like this, Achilles, I've talked about Achilles on my show. Let's change gears for a minute. But, I've talked about other myths on the show before. Talked about Achilles. He got gifted a spear from the gods, then he got gifted a sword from the gods, and then he got gifted a shield from the gods just for being who he was. This guy kills an insatiable demon that's hungry for human flesh, and all he gets is a freaking fox. He got gypped. I'd have been asking for something. But returning back to topic, the Wendigo itself is said to be a curse, but it's also said to be cursed. So it's the curse of there is a curse of the Wendigo, and the curse of the Wendigo is that you could become a Wendigo. Important to note that curse of the Wendigo is the fact that you yourself could become a Wendigo, and that's just terrifying enough. But the Wendigo itself is also a being that is cursed, because a person who's suffering from the curse of the Wendigo must wander the land forever, seeking to fulfill their voracious appetite for human flesh. And if there's nothing left to eat, it must be in a perpetual state of starving to death until it eventually dies. And it's not clear, as far as stories go, it's not clear how long its lifespan is. But I'm assuming that if it's supposed to wander the land eternally to seek fulfillment for its voracious appetite for human flesh and other resources, that if there's nothing and it doesn't locate something to eat, I can only imagine that it's already been suffering from starving to death for all this time. It's probably going to take it a while to die. So that's just terrible. That's just terrible all the way around. Now, there are some other ways that one can become a Wendigo, much like the Legends of Vampires. I talk about how within the Slavic folklore and vampires, shitty people become vampires when they die. Kind of the nicest way, the easiest way to say it. This is a similar scenario with the Wendigo. If you're a crappy person while you're alive, you're probably going to be cursed, and you're going to come back as a Wendigo and terrorize your relatives and your tribe. So just don't be an asshole, and you won't come back as a Wendigo is kind of what they were going for. it's interesting that we have people before us came up with these stories, and they were kind of like, all right, everybody don't be a jerk, and you won't have this terrible thing happen to you. But I swear, if you're a jerk, you're going to be this thing. You're going to be this awful thing that comes back and devours people. You know that there was a guy that was like, the joke's on you, man. I'm cool with living forever, even if it does mean I got to be a general pain in the ass and eat everybody around me. That's fine. I can only imagine the terror, the amazing arguments that were had over, becoming a Wendigo. Like, you're a jerk, man. You're probably going to die and become a Wendigo. Yeah, well, whatever, I don't care. I'm going to be that's fine with me. According to legend, people that displayed extreme greed, gluttony, the desire to live a life of excess might be possessed by a Wendigo at death. Thus, this myth served as a method of encouraging cooperation and moderation. The idea that, okay, guys, we're all in this thing together. We're all in this together, and we all need to do our part. We need to all be contributing to the betterment of our community. Don't get greedy. If you have a good harvest, share. If you have a good kill at the hunt that you were on, share it with your neighbors. Don't be a selfish douche. Because other people are hungry and they're going to want to eat and they're going to want to live, so don't be a jerk, be willing to share. Now, again, important to note, I want to return again. I know we're bouncing back and forth, but I'm kind of just kind of rolling with it. Now, the legend itself, again, I talked about this, to the disputed modern medical term, the Wendigo psychosis, which is considered by some to be a syndrome that creates an intense craving for human flesh and a fear of becoming a cannibal. It's ironic that this psychosis is said to occur within people living around the Great Lakes of Canada and the United States, which is one of the reasons why it is such a hot-button topic for people within the field of anthropology and psychology. Now, Wendigo psychosis usually only develops in the winter. Imagine that. And individuals who are isolated by heavy snow for long periods, long months. We also have other terms for this. It's called cabin fever, guys. Come on. You go crazy when you're pent up for a long period of time. Moon madness. No, we get that cabin fever. You get stir crazy, whatever you want to call it. This is just another term for that. With the added caveat that you're going to eat your neighbors or eat your entire family like Mr. Swiftrunner did. Come on, Swiftrunner. What's wrong with you? All you had to do was, walk 25 miles to get some food. Why you got to eat your neighbors? I mean, why you got to eat your whole family? And you didn't even start with your son. You ate your wife first. I mean, what is that? Now, the most common response when a person shows signs of Wendigo psychosis was a curing attempt by traditional native healers. In the cases of the past, if these attempts failed and if the person was possessed and they began to either threaten those around them or act violently or antisocially, they were executed. There are suggestions that there have been reports regarding this psychosis dating back hundreds of years, which, of course, as well as there might be because the story's pretty old. The fact that people would be keeping a close eye on people around them, is not anything new, particularly in a society that is, tight-knit communities, of course you're going to be keeping an eye on the people around you. You guys, live together, you live around each other every single day. You're going to be noticing if your neighbor Bob's house, you're going to notice if cabin smells like dead animal and he's been in there eating his neighbor, eating his whole family. You would hopefully notice that. Now, Wendigo psychosis, the initial symptoms are poor appetite, nausea and vomiting. Then subsequently the individual begins to develop a delusion of being transformed into a Wendigo. The people who have Wendigo psychosis increasingly see others around them as being edible, and at the same time they have exaggerated fear of becoming cannibals. So they're torn by this innate desire to eat their friends like pork chops, but then they're torn between the internal struggle of, I don't want to be a cannibal. Sounds to me, I'm going to have to side. I don't want to take too much in the way of sides on this, but it seems, just based on what we know about this Wendigo psychosis, that honestly, you put these people in a situation where they're isolated, there's slim to no resources. You're just asking for people to do something messed up. You really are just asking for people to do some messed up stuff. So, again, sightings of the Wendigo are still reported, particularly in northern Ontario, near the Cave of the Wendigo. Imagine that. There's a cave called the Cave of the Wendigo. And people say they see Wendigo there. Well, it's probably why they call it the Cave of the Wendigo, but who am I? I'm just a guy that's, telling you the story, right? There's also been reported sightings around the town of Kenora, where it has allegedly been spotted by traders, trackers, and trappers for decades. But there are many people that still believe that the Wendigo roams the woods in the prairies of northern Minnesota and Canada. Kenora, Ontario, Canada, has been given the title the Wendigo Capital of the World by many, and sightings of the creature in this area have continued well into the new millennium. So, interestingly enough, the Wendigo is still, people still claim to see Wendigo, to see this creature. But, when you look at this idea of the Wendigo psychosis, when you look at this story itself, it's easy to see where people would try to rationalize this story, but sometimes stories don't need to be rationalized. We can take them for what they give us on the outside, right? We can take them for what they are. Right off the bat, I can conceive of, ways in which we can look at this story and just take it for what it is. And when I say take it for what it is, let's just look at the context of the story. The context of this story is, greedy people are bad people, community. We live in a community in which we rely on one another, and we rely on one another's generosity to survive. If everybody is open and honest about the resources that they have, it makes survival easier. It makes us work together as a community. We go together. Everything is peanut butter and jelly when we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing. When we've got the people bringing in the harvest, everybody's bringing in their fair share of food, it's peanut butter jelly time. Everything's great. But when we have somebody in the community who doesn't want to fulfill their end of the bargain, who wants to benefit but doesn't want to contribute, or who doesn't want to let the community benefit from what they do. So let's say we have a hunter in our community and he is pretty good at what he does, but he doesn't want to share. Well, he's hunting the woods, clean of all the game, but he's not sharing any of it, so we're not the tribe itself is not benefiting. If that's not reason enough for this story, as a social control to encourage generosity, I don't know what is. Always this, that we always have this desire as people, we have a desire to try and understand, to try and rationalize the story. That can't be it. That can't be all of it, We can't just, leave the due credit of, they came up with this story because they gave people something to be afraid of. something to fear so that they would maintain their spot in society, so that they would do, so that they would adhere to what they were responsible for, so they would live up to their responsibilities and do the things that they're supposed to do. That oftentimes is not enough for us as people. We want to complicate it. You know, you see these shows, and you know, I don't like to rail against them too hard, but because I think sometimes they try to get people interested in history, and I'm very passionate about history. I'm very passionate about the things that I'm talking about. But I don't want to bash the History Channel too much, but I'm going to criticize them here, because you see the way that they cover stories like this. They don't want to talk about – they don't want to leave well enough alone in this instance. Me, I'm willing to accept this story of the Wendigo for what it is. I don't have to decide whether or not the Wendigo is real. That's not important. The why of the story is more important. So whether or not the Wendigo is real is not relevant. The Wendigo could be real for all I know, probably not. Not, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to rule it out, but it's most likely not. It's a story – that serves a purpose, right? Just like vampires are a story that serve a purpose. They serve a purpose, and the purpose that they serve is to keep people in check, keep people in line. This is often not good enough for people within the field of history. Oftentimes, they want to say, well, you know, maybe they were just stupid. You know, maybe those people were just stupid. I mean, that's just ridiculous to have this creature, you know, running around the woods scaring people. That's just, you know, that's, you know, bogus. That's bull crap. You know, our ancestors, ha, they were so stupid. They didn't know anything. But I know the truth. I know how weather works. I know how all this stuff works. You know, I know the way things are because I'm the modern, more advanced person. But we don't want to give credit where credit is due. First off, I think it's important when we look at these stories, we credit the people that came before us for their creativity. These stories are incredibly creative. They show the depth of how they show a tremendous amount of complexity and depth as far as explaining a metaphor, as far as using imagery. These are incredibly complicated interwoven tales that they are telling and sharing back and forth. And the fact that many of these communities that are coming up with these stories are oral traditions and they're still able to tell such a story is phenomenal. It's impressive. It's damn impressive. I mean, some of us, we can barely remember breakfast. These people were remembering this story and the details of this story and retelling the story. Now, that's not to say that the story's details didn't change over time. Of course it changed over time. That's why we have so many different tellings of the story. But what is important is that the story stayed alive for so long because people remembered it and they told it and it served a purpose. It had value to these people, and that's what's important. We get so hung up today, we are very hung up on, oh, well, that's not what I believe, so that's just bull. You know, that's a load of malarkey because I don't believe in it. But we are not in a position where we should worry about whether or not it's real to us. It's important when we look at these things to realize that it's real to these people. It's important to them. They valued it as a culture, as a society. They valued this. It was important to them. It had value to them. And we just need to look at the reasons why it had value to them. One of the major – this is a major critique I have of the way that people have sort of tackled the Wendigo in the past is, you know, people have talked about it and they've said, oh, well, you know, let's – you know, Wendigo psychosis. They take a story and they say, oh, well, they must have been crazy. That's what it is. You know, it's cabin fever. It's stir craziness. You know, that's what it is. They're just crazy. What if it's just what if it, they're not crazy and they're just telling a really good story? You know, where do we draw the line between genius and insanity, right? You know, one person's insanity is another person's genius. When we look at this story, it's incredibly apparent that these people were very intelligent. The people that came up with the story. The people that came up with this story are incredibly brilliant. And when we look at this, I think it's important that we give these people credit for what they came up with. you know, you look at, and this really harkens back to the quote by Oscar Levant, there's a fine line between genius and insanity. And I've embraced this line. Where am I going with this, you might ask? Well, these people, these psychologists and anthropologists, they're attempting to look at this story and they're saying, oh my God, these people are crazy. They're mentally ill. That's what their problem is. But to say that is to write off a lot of things. First off, it's to write off the cultural contribution these people are making by telling the story to begin with. It also writes off the reason that they're telling this story. Why are they telling this story? Well, I've hammered it home numerous times already, but they're telling this story to keep people in their community in line. This is a warning. This story is a warning. It's not a ghost story that we're telling to entertain ourselves. It's not, there's one guy, he's crazy, he just told this story, now people believe it, they're paranoid, they're going to eat everybody. Oh my God, we need to, no. This is a story that is a warning. It serves to warn us of a couple of things. The first thing it warns us of is to not be greedy. Don't turn your back on your community. Don't be greedy and rob the people around you of their resources. Don't do that. The second thing that it tells us is, it should be obvious, but for this time period, during a time in which people, you know, might practice cannibalism in some cases, cannibalism is a taboo in many parts of the world. It's a taboo here. We sure as hell don't encourage people to eat other people here. And these people, you know, would probably agree with you. They don't think eating people is right either. Clearly, the Wendigo eats people, and that's not a good thing. It's very clear in this story that eating people is not good, okay? Eating people's bad, okay? Don't do that. And so the Wendigo story serves to tell us these things. It reinforces this, the importance of contributing to the community and not hoarding resources, not stealing from the community, being willing to share with your community. This is very important. You want to make sure you're sharing with the community. You want to make sure you're doing your part. You're contributing to the community. And then there's the other half of it. Don't eat people. When times get desperate, turn to your neighbors, turn to your community. Do not do something extreme. I think it's actually kind of comforting to think about when you people are going to say, what? It's comforting. What do you mean? This thing is terrifying. You said it yourself. This story does kind of lend itself to something that is rather comforting. Eating someone else in a desperate situation. If you're so desperate, you're going to eat somebody? That's just terrible, right? But what did these people all forget when they're eating their family? Well, if we look at the case of Swift Runner, his son dies. It's him and his wife and kids. But he eats his wife. Why not work together to survive? Your extreme is jump to eating the person. You're not going to plan it out. You're not going to use them as a resource. Instead of devouring them and using them as a temporary resource, acknowledge the value of the people around you as a resource that can make you better, that can make you stronger. The community is there for you. You're there for the community. They will be there for you. So don't turn your back on them. So by not turning your back on the community, by not being greedy, by not stealing from the community, you've assured your position within the community, and you've made sure that when your time comes, when the time comes that you need somebody to lean on, you need somebody, they're going to be there for you. And this story of the Wendigo reminds us that when you're desperate, you know, don't jump right to the extreme. Don't be afraid to turn back to the community. That's what we're here for. We're here for you to turn back to us. That's what we're here for. We're a family. We're a community. You can rely on us to get you out of this tight spot. We can help you make it. So the Wendigo itself as a story shows us a few things. Number one, it shows us people that give in to their fear. their anxiety, and they lose control of their reason. They turn their back on reason. They let fear rule them. The fear that they're going to die because they don't have resources and they don't know what they're going to do, so they just jump to the extreme. They kill their family members. Or they eat them. They resort to this extreme of cannibalism when it perhaps really isn't all that necessary. So when you think about that, the story of the Wendigo serves to give us many lessons. It's a reminder that our community is there, that the community is there to help you. It's there for you. And as long as you're there for the community, they will be there for you. And I think that is one of the major reasons why we want to make sure that we give this story. You want to make sure you're giving this story its due. This is an incredibly creative story, but it's an incredibly important story for what it does for the people within this community. And this is, you know, this is what I wanted to really get at with this story is, you know, we take a lot of these stories and we're so focused on, oh my God, can we prove if it's true? Are there really Wendigo? That's not as important as we think it is. What's more important is, why are they telling the story? What can we learn from the story they're telling? And how can we benefit from it in the long run? So what is the what is the purpose of the story? What is the overall cultural significance? And then we move to, what can we take away from it? The way we need to approach mythology. That's the way we need to approach religion. That is the way we need to approach these stories. The way we approach these stories has been wrong for years. For years, it's been the wrong way of approaching the story. We've been approaching these mythologies and these religious ideas in the wrong way. We've been so focused on whether or not we can prove it's true that we're not taking away the lessons we can learn from the stories themselves. It's not important if the story is true. It's not even important if I believe in the story. If I believe it's real or not, not relevant. What is important is whether or not we can learn from it. What can we take away from the story? What can we learn? I think today we've learned a great deal about the Wendigo. Yes, it's a terrifying entity that can possess people, and you know, it's a ghostly predator that can feed on people's flesh. But it's also a stand-in for things like greed and economic and environmental destruction. It's a stand-in for avarice within the human spirit, the desire to consume until there's nothing left, and the lack of consideration for one's community. But it also highlights the fact that we must not be afraid to rely on our community. We can, in the long run, benefit from contributing to our community, and we can benefit from our community itself. By contributing to our community, by being connected to our community, we can benefit from the community. And we can be beneficial to our community as well. What I've got for you guys today, I know the show is today is a little bit shorter than normal. We didn't have to go the full time today. But I think we got a lot of mileage out of it. So I want to give you guys plenty of source material. I mentioned some sources throughout the segment, but I want to go back to some of these sources and give you guys some stuff to look at, some things that you guys can benefit from. So go ahead and get some of these pulled back up so you guys can get a little bit out of this. So one of the books that I would recommend you guys look at is The History of the Ojibwe People by William W. Warren. So something for you guys to look at, marking, you know, some of the cultural beliefs in the Wendigo that are held by people. You can look at you can look at Robin Ridington's Wet'suwet'en and Wendigo, A Comparison of Cannibal Belief Among Boreal Forests, Athapascans and Algonquians. This is an article you can find on JSTOR. Pretty interesting article. Worth your time for sure. If you're gonna look into the Wendigo, I would recommend looking into that. You can also look at James R. Stevens and Thomas Fiddler Killing the Shaman with the Penumbra Press. Going Wendigo, The Emergence of the Iconic Monster in Margaret Atwood's Oryx and Crake, and Antonio Bird's Ravenous. It's an article done on that. You can look at the story by Algernon Blackwood, The Willows, The Wendigo, and Other Horrors. Short story, if you're interested in just listen, you know, reading a short story. I would also recommend looking at Brady DeSanti's The Cannibal Talking Head, Portrayals of the Wendigo Monster in Popular Culture and Ojibwe Traditions. It's with the Journal of Religion and Popular Culture. It'll pop up on JSTOR for you if you type in there. You can also look at Joe Lockhart's Facing the Wendigo, Gerald Weisner and Primo Levi with the University of Nebraska Press. Certainly worth your time. Also take a look at Troy Taylor's The Wendigo, The Northwoods of Minnesota. There are a number of websites dedicated specifically to the Wendigo, so it's important that I bring those up for you guys. So you can go take a look for yourself if you're interested. You can look at an article done on ancient origins, reconstructing the story of humanity's past. It's at www.ancient-origins.net. And the article is titled "Be Wary of the Wendigo," which is a terrifying beast of Native American legend with an insatiable hunger to devour mankind. So that's a website that can be pretty good when you're looking at mythological things specifically. You can look at legendsofamerica.com, and specifically you can look at Minnesota Legends, Wendigo, the Flesh Eater of the Forest. It's an article contributed by Kathy Weiser with their website there. They use a number of sources. Basically, they use mostly Wikipedia sources, but they also look at a few sites dedicated to Native American mythology and legends. So feel free to take a look at that and jump down that rabbit hole. They also use Ghosts of the Prairie. There's prairieghost.com has an entire article dedicated to the Wendigo, the Northwoods of Minnesota. But it's mainly a sort of short story representation of the Wendigo. You can also look at a few of the links on their website. They'll take you to a number of websites dedicated to the paranormal. Pararesearchers.org is one of them. Now, keep in mind, guys, when you go and look at these things, this is not me saying, look at all these sources so that you know, it proves that the Wendigo is real. At no point in time, and I want to make this clear, have I now, nor am I, will I corroborate that the Wendigo is real. I would never make a statement that the Wendigo was real. What I would say is that it's important that we recognize the significance of the story. The story itself lends itself to a lot of interpretations. I think we've went over a number of them, and I think it's important that we just take the story for what it is. It's an entertaining story that teaches us a lesson, community and generosity. But that's all I've got for you guys today. Since nobody's calling in and asking questions, I'm going to leave it there, guys. Thanks for tuning in with the Bareback Facts. Catch me next week, of course, Friday, 5 p.m. We're going to be bringing back some new formats. We're going to be bringing back the Mythical Fight Nights, bringing back the Historical Coliseum. Very excited about that. For those of you in my new radio audience, you guys have not been exposed to these. You're going to be in for a real treat. I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to be pitting two legendary figures against each other in a war for supremacy. It's going to be fun. So the Historical Coliseum this time is going to feature Yu Fei, the famed Chinese general who was said to have never been defeated in battle and never to have lost a battle, the inventor of several styles of martial art and an incredible philosopher of first time. And he's going to be matched up against the legacy of Miyamoto Musashi, the famous samurai, who is the author of a number of books dedicated to literature specifically aimed towards instructing samurai, and also a guy who is said to have never lost a duel and said to have defeated over 100 people in hand-to-hand combat. So very impressive stuff for that. And then, of course, Mythical Fight Night. I get to do the same thing, but I get to do it with mythical figures like the Wendigo. It's going to be much different, though. I'm tackling two very powerful gods. That's right. We're going to be bringing in the Demon King, Valor, from Celtic mythology. We're going to be talking about his abilities, the stories surrounding him, and we're going to be pitting him against Cernobog, the Slavic Lord of Darkness. That's coming to you guys very soon. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking with me. This has been another edition of the Bareback Facts. Hope you and guys enjoyed the show. And, of course, you guys can catch me live on Sundays, every Sunday morning as well, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for Straight Football Talk. And, guys, where you can get your football fix, and you don't have to worry about the politics of it. You know, we don't deal with the politics, the nonsense. It's strictly non-filtered, non-biased coverage of your favorite NFL teams. We give you guys updates on trades, rumors, rumor mills, and exclusive interviews with NFL players, NFL free agents, and Hall of Famers that you can't get anywhere else. So do check us out at Straight Football Talk. You can follow us on Facebook. You can also follow the Bareback Facts on Facebook. Catch any episodes you missed there or on iTunes. Guys, that's all I've got for you today. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I will see you all on Sunday for Straight Football Talk.